This is The Guardian.
Today, 2021. If you don't laugh, you'll cry. We look back at a year in politics with John Crace. What a 12 months it's been. And what a time to be a political sketch writer. Just think back to January 2021. How far away it seems, and yet oddly familiar.
Good afternoon. I want to update everybody about vaccines because...
John Crace, you're The Guardian's political sketch writer. So let's rewind to the beginning of the year when a new variant of COVID was running rampant. Infections were on the rise. There was a lockdown potentially on the horizon. And you were watching as the Prime Minister announced new COVID measures. Can you remind me what your very astute political analysis was of the situation then?
I'm not sure it was astute. You know, this was yet again a government that looked like it had been caught on the hop a bit.
When everybody looks at the position, people understand overwhelmingly that we have no choice.
What we all thought, I think, was that if we can just get through 3 or 4 months until we're all vaccinated, we can maybe see the back of the coronavirus. How right we were.
Lockdowns, vaccines, and months of political scandals. But through it, for sanity's sake, we have managed to laugh along the way. You know, at videos about parties that weren't parties. At a health secretary caught on CCTV showing us all how he makes its moves. John Crace has been satirising it all throughout. And he's never been short of material when it comes to the man he watches more than any other. The Prime Minister.
One of the ongoing themes of my sketches this year is the shock horror as various Tories discover that Boris Johnson behaves like Boris Johnson.
From The Guardian, I'm Nosheen Iqbal. Today in Focus, how to understand the last year in Westminster with John Crace. John, you talked about that moment last January of watching Johnson announce another lockdown. But things were soon on the up, weren't they? The vaccine was rolled out, the restrictions very slowly were eased. What did you make of Johnson at the time?
To be honest, I thought that Johnson had probably got away with it. I mean, a lot of his early planning in sort of 2020 had been sort of hopeless. I mean, if we go back to right to the beginning of the pandemic, he had delayed lockdown. I mean, all sorts of rumours were circulating. One of the most extraordinary was that he partly delayed it so that his wife, Carrie, could have her baby shower for her first... That was for the first baby. That's how long we've been at it.
I mean, they did kind of pull it off. The government was popular. It won by-elections in places like Hartlepool. But even then, it didn't exactly contain the greatest minds of its generation. Can we spend a minute on some of the bright stars we've lost along the way, starting with Gavin Williamson?
Oh, Gavin. Of course, who can possibly forget him? I mean, it was always a rather sort of strange to imagine that Gavin could, you know, could rise from fireplace salesman of the year, as I used to call him, into the cabinet for no apparent reason. Before that, he'd been defence secretary even. And I can remember going to an event down in Chippenham and he was asked about the Russian poisonings in Salisbury. And he said that Russia should just shut up and go away. And
you kind of think, that's one tactic. You know.
That will do it. That will do it. This is what we need to hear from a serious defence secretary.
But we know he was scary because he had a tarantula on his desk.
So. Oh, God, yeah, Kronos, the tarantula. Yeah, I mean, I think for a while he lived the dream. He'd managed to mess up the A-level and GCSE results. And he really was the first to go. And he hasn't really been seen of since, really, which is more than one can say for Matt Hancock.
Ooh, I was going to ask you who else you've missed.
Well, no one took Matt more seriously than Matt. He was the person, you know, the voice of reason, the defender of the... You could tell that he really loved the NHS because he would always be seen in a little NHS badge. And then, of course, come the summer, it turns out that he hadn't been obeying the social distancing rules quite as rigorously as he'd been urging the rest of the country to.
I've been to see the Prime Minister to resign as Secretary of State for Health and Social Care. Those of us who make these rules have got to stick by them, and that's why I've got to resign.
I mean, that video footage, CCTV footage of him in the department in a clinch is something that most of us who've seen it will never be able to forget.
It's still, like, rolling behind my eyes now. I think it's seared on the collective memory and it's traumatising us all, but...
It really is. And I've thought about it at length, well, probably for too long. And it's not the snogging that is the real issue, I think. It's the squeezing.
It's the little dance just before the squeezing. It's the... Yeah. Oh. It's actually given me a full body cringe.
But the weirdest thing about it is that Matt clearly feels that he's in line for a comeback. Matt has been in Parliament sucking up to, you know, Boris and the cabinet and sort of making pronouncements saying that the new health secretary is doing exactly what he would have been doing.
And can I congratulate the Secretary of State and the new vaccines minister on the rollout of booster jabs, over 3 million administered so far. And
it's all a bit kind of, really.
Looking back to that early summer, late spring, what sort of stood out to you as a moment that you really enjoyed writing about?
Well, I mean, there was always Dominic Cummings to write about.
The problem in this crisis was very much lions led by donkeys over and over again.
I have to say that I enjoyed his appearance before the Select Committee, which went on for something like 4 hours.
The government itself, and Number 10, was not operating on a war footing. Lots of key people were literally skiing in the middle of February.
Dominic Cummings has always been a sort of... he's always had a fascination for Westminster, you know, people working inside Westminster bubble. And that was a sort of great moment.
He just tells everyone, it's swine flu, don't worry about it. I'm going to get Chris Whitty to inject me live on TV with coronavirus. So everyone realises it's nothing to be frightened of.
It was sort of weird because he talked a lot about the dysfunctionality that took place within Number 10 and never seemed to take responsibility for the fact that he had actually been the Prime Minister's special advisor for most of it.
Fundamentally, I regarded him as unfit for the job and I was trying to create a structure around him to try and stop what I thought were extremely bad decisions and push other things through against his wishes.
You always get the feeling with Cummings that he is desperate to bring down Johnson. And you would have thought that if anyone had the smoking gun to bring him down. But for some reason or other, he's never been able to produce the sort of killer detail that would really sort of do it. And even now, he tweets endlessly about journalists should have a look at this date for a party. And you kind of think, why don't you just tell us? If you know so much about it, why don't you just sort of say who was there, who drank what, who got a bit leery? you know, give us the details.
I was going to say, do you think if he could, he would completely slay Johnson and bring him down with all the information he has? Or is it a case of that he likes to puppeteer a bit and, you know, feed a bit of information there, throw a bone over there? You know, I imagine he sort of sits back and is sort of stroking a cat, watching it all unfold.
Well, he is genuinely an oddball. I mean, one of the things that he's done is he's started his own £10 a month subscription model for his Substack.
Please tell us you're subscribed, John, because a lot of us aren't, and so obviously we want to know what we're missing.
Well, for the first 4 months, I subscribed because I felt it was my duty, and I did get one sketch out of an Ask Me Anything panel. But I soon realised that Dominic didn't really understand his own business model, because it turned out that if he felt that not enough attention had been given to one of his blogs, then he would start tweeting all the best bits of it out for free anyway.
To the summer, where anticipation was high for July 19th. We were billed to have this huge Freedom Day, but obviously when it rolled round, the Prime Minister was self-isolating. It was the beginning of the pandemic, and it felt a bit like a damp squib. How did you feel about Freedom Day?
Well, I celebrated almost certainly by the way I celebrated most things throughout the pandemic, by not going out.
More staying in for John.
More staying in for John.
Even then, the government did feel pretty confident. Social distancing, they said, was done, masks were off, and the Tories seemed very keen on them not coming back or any precautionary measures taken at all. There was one MP, you wrote, who seemed like he wouldn't be happy until he had open-heart surgery with an unsterilised sore. What was the general mood like in Westminster?
Well, the Tory Libertarian MPs had been going in for months, regardless of the pandemic. And it was almost that, you know, you just got to put your shoulders back and breathe deeply. And that would be enough to see off COVID.
Well, I've decided that I'm now exempt. I'm exempt from wearing a mask on the basis of my genetic predisposition to liberty.
There seemed to be an odd overlap as well between the libertarian right and the sort of hardline Spartan Brexiteers. They were very much the same people saying, no, we must go out and get stuck in, and how dare the government try and tell us what to do.
Enduring images of that summer, I think I would say, is the man who you know felt so happy that England got to the final of the Euros. He stuck a firework up his bum to celebrate. I'm not saying it's a metaphor for the sense of abandon the libertarian end of the Tories feel, but do you see any parallels?
Absolutely.
And I guess another sign of this confidence is the fact that in the autumn, I think it was, that the fact of the job of the vaccine minister was being downgraded from a post that was sort of very celebrated and very much talked about to being handed to someone nobody had ever heard of.
That was another strange moment. I always thought that part of being a successful politician is being good luck, of being in the right place at the right time. And Nadeem Zahawi had definitely been in the right place at the right time as the vaccines minister, because it seemed that all he had to do was turn up and say, well done to everyone, another million people would be vaccinated. But you can't help feeling that come the autumn, the government had rather taken its eye off the ball. They'd sort of decided that COVID was as good as over, because the person they appointed to be the next vaccine minister is probably one of the most forgettable people in Parliament. Step forward, Maggie Throop.
Minister.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I beg to move that the House consider the health protection coronavirus...
I'm sure she's a very nice woman, but she has absolutely no sort of charisma. And at the dispatch box, she really didn't seem to know what was happening and what wasn't.
Well, I can speak for myself that I've really changed my habits with regard to hand washing since the pandemic began, and much to the detriment of my skin. But I think there are very simple measures that we can take that put in place.
And it did seem rather kind of like a metaphor for the sort of the government's sort of carelessness.
With someone like her, who you did write that she's that forgettable, even her shadow disowns her. Is it uncomfortable watching someone that out of their depth in Parliament? Or are you thinking, well, this is a gift for my column today?
It's a bit of both, to be honest. I mean, you're always looking for the moments of the cracks in the facade of smooth running government. But part of me just did really kind of think, because you could tell that poor old Maggie was struggling and that she really wanted to be somewhere else entirely.
Maggie Throop. I'm not being personal at all, but she is a minister. Where is she, minister?
Meanwhile, Keir Starmer, who seemed to spend his summer holiday toiling away on his homework.
So, Sir Keir Starmer has published a very long essay setting out his vision for Britain.
A 12,000-word essay titled The Road Ahead, which had its big showing just before party conference. John, can you put your literary critic hat on and tell me what were your highlighted bits?
Do you know that I think probably only about 100 people probably got to the end of that tome that he did say that he'd spent... Yeah, he'd been on holiday in Devon and he said he'd been getting up early in Wednesday, the morning to write it.
The pamphlet published with the Fabian Society pledged to repair the public finances and ended with the 10 principles that Keir Starmer said would guide his leadership. And
it
bring
was just all wishy-washy nonsense. I mean, it all floats completely by.
The 10 principles are: we will always put hard-working families and their priorities first. If you work hard and play by the rules, you should be rewarded fairly. People and businesses are...
I tried to read it, and by about page 2, my eyes began to glaze over. And,
ouch.
And by page 3, I was asleep.
John, I haven't even really touched on all the scandals that you've been covering this year. They've just been rumbling along. You know, the wallpaper that the Prime Minister couldn't afford without dubious donations, the Green Seal affair, and the whole hoo-ha around whether MPs should have second jobs. What's your chart-topping number one scandal to have written about this year?
Do you know, you've listed the three of them. The wallpaper scandal has been fantastic.
The PM's former advisor says Boris Johnson was working on a plan to get the cost secretly funded by Tory donors.
The idea that Boris didn't know who was paying for the refurb of his own house. Can you imagine, you know, if you were doing up your house and you were saying to the builders, look, I've got no idea who's going to pay you. But don't worry, something will turn up. And also, it was the small details that sort of emerged that I kind of really liked. And that is that the wallpaper had started peeling off within months of it being applied.
But his decision to make it his own with a reportedly £200,000 refurbishment has raised questions over who paid for it. And whether
then we've had the Owen Paterson scandal of sort of blatant lobbying while being paid over £100,000 a year from Randox, and Boris saying that's the hill to die on and sort of making his MPs sort of vote to overturn a recommended 28-day suspension.
Now, he has decided to stand down as an MP for North Shropshire. He's just issued this statement saying he will remain a public servant, but outside the cruel world of politics.
And then we've had the sort of advent calendar-like role of various number 10 parties that have come to public attention over the recent weeks.
The evening of the 18th, there was a Christmas party in number 10.
A Conservative politician has stepped down after a photograph of him at a Christmas party last December was published.
Boris Johnson's controversial Christmas quiz.
It's a wonder that anyone was doing any work at all in there.
His fictional party was a business meeting. And it was not socially distanced.
Over the past, you know, 2 weeks, we've had Dominic Raab, Sajid Javid. They've all had to go out and defend Boris for his sort of lunatic behaviour.
I didn't attend. I don't remember attending this party, but I don't even think there were parties.
If there's a breach of the rules, there's a breach of the rules. That's circular, Andrew, but I don't know the full facts because I wasn't there.
Whatever the event was, then...
There was an event.
I think the most interesting thing is the ones who haven't been going out. Liz Truss seems to have been spending most of her time on a photo shoot for her Christmas card, which made her look like sort of Britannia reincarnated. You know, she looks more regal than the Queen, sitting there looking terribly prim and well-coiffed in front of a flag and an old colonial globe. And Rishi, now turns out, has been taken himself off to California.
The Chancellor, we understand that he is planning to return from a trip to the United States sooner than expected. That's in light, obviously, of the rising...
Coming up, does this long-time Johnson watcher think time's up for the PM? John, the person at the centre of this, who at this point has been protected at all costs, it seems, is the Prime Minister, who seems to have short-circuited in recent weeks and, you know, has started blethering on about Peppa Pig and delivered some pretty corny gags at PMQs. Is something unravelling here?
Well, I feel that something has changed. And one of the first signs that sort of Boris was really beginning to fall apart was his speech to the CBI. These are the businessmen you want on your side. So most Tory prime ministers have always made sure they're well prepared for it. But Boris clearly had no sense of place, of where he was. He paid no attention to the feelings of the audience.
Yesterday I went, as we all must, to Peppa Pig World.
It wasn't just the sort of Peppa Pig riff about what a wonderful place it's got. That in itself was extraordinary.
I don't know if you've been to Peppa Pig World. Who's been to... How's anybody who's been to Peppa Pig World? Not enough.
He then managed to lose his place in the middle of the speech.
So with safer streets, with great local schools, with fantastic broadband...
He was sort of shuffling his papers, saying...
Forgive me.
Forgive me. Forgive me.
Forgive me.
Forgive me. And you could feel that the mood in the room was, no, we're not going to forgive you.
Forgive me.
I guess now, looking at Boris, at one point it seemed he was untouchable, but is the jig now up for him?
I've often thought or hoped as much, but I mean, I think the answer is yes. I kind of think that by this time next year, Boris will no longer be Tory Prime Minister. Boris actually looks terrible these days, physically terrible. It's like, you know, the job has got to him. You know, his eyes are now pinpricks. And I think I described him as a sort of 80-year-old, out-of-shape body, topped off with the haircut of a toddler who had wandered into a skunk farm with secateurs.
that's one image. who, and this next question is not you as a voter, but as a sketchwriter, who would you want to follow him? Would it be Sunak, Truss, even your favourite Matt Hancock?
No, it's got to be Liz Truss, because I've never heard her say anything other than the inane. I cannot quite understand. I mean, she regularly tops Tory polls of the most popular member of the cabinet, and I've no idea why.
In December, I'll be in Beijing, opening up new pork markets.
We can all remember her Tory party speech where she basically says, I want to talk about cheese.
We import 2/3 of our cheese. That is a disgrace.
another reason I kind of want her in is because I think she will perform hopelessly. And I think she will provide excellent copy for me throughout.
Let's see. John, thank you so much.
Not at all. Thank you, Nisheen.
That was John Crace. My thanks to him. You can buy John's book, A Farewell to Calm, in all good bookshops now. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Sammy Kent. Sound design is by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Mythili Rao and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.